Today, will costs of living be the epicentre of the upcoming election? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics World, and this post covering finance and property news. With Parliament back after the summer break, if parliamentary questions are anything to go by, the issue of cost of living pressures will be front and centre of the upcoming campaigns. Worth reflecting on how effective Trump proved to be in the US, asking the simple question, are you better off now or previously? Of course, words and figures can differ, not least because the data may not all point in the same direction and can be spun vigorously. For example, inflation may be coming down from its highs, but the accumulated additional costs of pretty much everything still hangs heavy on household budgets. And while cost of living support like power rebates or rental assistance can help fudge the headline figures and even perhaps bounce the RBA into a rate cut, data still shows we have a problem. For example, the latest from our household surveys looking at financial stress in cash flow terms shows that around 76% of those in the rental sector are under pressure, and just under half with mortgage payments are in the same boat, but others are doing significantly better. So averaging masks the extremes that we're seeing. Actually, the latest data from the ABS on household spending showed that it rose 0.4% in December, seasonally adjusted, but that followed a 0.8% rise in November and a 1% rise in October. Or in other words, it shows a slowing of spending. Yet, the ABS reports that household spending on discretionary goods and services rose 0.6%, which was the third straight monthly rise. And in fact, five of the nine spending categories saw growth in December, primarily fueled by higher spending on discretionary goods and services. Looking at the detail, the growth in December was driven by new vehicle purchases, dining out, air travel, and streaming services. The ABS said that continued strength in clothing and footwear, furnishings and household equipment, and goods for recreation and culture also contributed to higher discretionary spending as consumers capitalised on the end-of-year sales season. Nice if you have the money. And they also said that household spending grew in all states and territories, with the highest percentage rise in Western Australia, up 0.7%, Tasmania up 0.5%, and the Northern Territory up 0.5%, while Queensland at 0.2% experienced the smallest rise. Now, they also produced quarterly household spending volumes, which are adjusted for inflation, and they said household spending volumes were 1.4% higher in the December 2024 quarter than the same time last year. In original terms, furnishings and household equipment were up 5.3%, miscellaneous goods and services were up 3.9%, and transport were up 3%. They were the largest rises, while alcohol beverages and tobacco fell 12.2%. Now, this highlights the gap between those under financial pressures and those doing much better, thanks to rising pay, higher returns on cash deposits, and also from strong financial markets. And today, the ABS published their selected costs of living indices, and they reported that the cost of living indices reported movements between 0.1% and 0.4% in the December quarter across their specific segments. Alcohol and tobacco, recreation and culture, and insurance and financial services were the main positive contributors across all the LCIs. But those increases were offset by falls in electricity and automotive fuel prices. In fact, also, over the last 12 months to December 2024 quarter, the LCIs rose between 2.5% and 4% despite all the government support measures. But if you look at the detail, living costs for aged pensioners and pensioner and beneficiary households fell 0.1% in the December 24 quarter, according to the ABS. This is the first fall in quarterly living costs since the June 2020 quarter for households whose main source of income is government payments. Now, this is a government-induced result, of course, because lower prices for electricity due to the 24-25 Commonwealth Energy Bill Relief Fund rebates impacted living costs this quarter. Those lower electricity prices largely offset rises in other areas of living costs. And living costs were also impacted by an increase in the Commonwealth rent assistance this quarter, especially for aged pensioner and pensioner and beneficiary households. The increase in the CRA reduced the amount of rent payable by eligible households. From the 20th of September 2024, the maximum rate of CRA increased by 10% in addition to the usual biennial CPI indexation each year. Government payment recipient households also experienced falls in health costs due to an increase in the proportion of those households reaching the pharmaceutical benefits scheme safety net threshold this quarter, reducing their out-of-pocket expenses. Or in other words, taxpayers are providing significant support to hold these costs down. That said, employee households saw the largest rise in living costs across the household types this quarter, up 0.4%. And the ABS said that while the growth in employee households' living costs have also been slowed, those households continue to see higher rises than others, as they're more impacted by mortgage interest charges. The Reserve Bank of Australia's cash rate stayed at the same this quarter. However, higher mortgage debt levels and the continued rollover expired fixed-rate mortgages to higher variable-rate mortgages led to a rise in mortgage interest charges, which is, of course, what we're seeing in our surveys. Falls in electricity and automotive fuel, as well as slowing growth in insurance premiums, mortgage interest charges, and food prices over the last 12 months contributed to the lowest annual living cost rises in over 2 years, the ABS said. Of the household types, employee households had the largest annual cost of living rises, up 4%. Mortgage interest charges were up by 14.7% over the year. That's down from an annual rise of 18.9% of the September 24 quarter. The smaller increase reflected the unchanged cash rate over the past 12 months and a fall in the share of expired fixed rate mortgages rolling over to higher variable rate mortgages, they said. An aged pensioner and self-funded retiree households saw the smallest annual rise in living costs, both up 2.5% for the year. Mortgage interest charges and rents, which rose over the year, makes up a smaller proportion of spending for those household types. The Pensioner and Beneficiary Living Costs Index, which measures living costs for aged pensioners and other government transfer recipient households, rose 2.8% over the year, compared to a rise of 2.4% in the CPI, so still higher. In other words, people are going backwards. Government pensions are indexed on the 20th of March and the 20th of September by the greater of the rise in the cost of living and the CPI over a six-month period. Over the 6 months between June 24 quarter and the September 24 quarter, the cost of living index rose 0.2%, while the CPI rose 0.4%. Now, in that context, take a listen to this extract from the questions in Parliament today. It was a bit of a shit show, really.
We shall move to questions without notice. Are there any questions? And I give the call to the Honourable, the Leader of the Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. Under this weak Albanese Labor government, interest rates have increased 12 times, energy bills have risen by $1,000, wow. Living standards have collapsed, 27,000 businesses have gone insolvent, and we're in a record-breaking household recession. Will the Prime Minister now apologise for promising Australians they would be better off and admit that they can't afford another 3 years of this weak Albanese Labor government?
Give the call. Order. Members on my right will cease interjection immediately. The Prime Minister has the call.
Thanks very much, Mr Speaker. Well, when we came to office, real incomes were going backwards. Inflation was going up, rising, had a six in front of it, and indeed we had people's living standards going backwards. And we had deficits, a $78 billion deficit that we inherited in the March 2022 budget. But let's go through the figures of then and now that is raised by the Leader of the Opposition. Inflation in that March 2022 quarter was 2.1%. In the quarter that has just passed, headline was 0.2%. Yeah. And underlying was 0.5%. Inflation was 2.4%, on an annual basis under the 2 to 3 range that the RBA aimed for, in the bottom half of that range. That was achieved without seeing the massive spike in unemployment that we have seen in comparable economies. Unemployment is 4%, up from 3.9 to 4 on the latest figures. So what we have seen also is that wages have increased 4 quarters in a row. So inflation up, wages down, unemployment low. That is what has been achieved through the hard work of Australians. We also have received, during that period, two budget surpluses, back-to-back surpluses. Now, those opposite didn't worry about inflation. At a time where you had that inflation rising, interest rates had begun to rise, what was their response to the March 2022 budget? That produced a $78 billion predicted deficit, and deficits each year all the way through. His debut.
Order. Order. Members on my right, the manager, has the Prime Minister concluded his answer? The manager is entitled to raise a point of order, and he shall do so now.
Thanks very much, Mr. Speaker. The Prime Minister was asked a question about his promise to make Australians better off. That cannot stray into opposition policy or the previous government, by definition, because it's from the date of your promise to now and order. Whether Australians are better off.
Order. The Treasurer and the Minister for Housing. Just because someone makes a point of order is not the cue to give a running commentary. The manager is entitled to raise a point of order, and he's done so. And I'll hear from the Leader of the House on the point of order.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, I'm not sure if he actually said what the point of order was on, but if he was referring to direct relevance, you look at the terms of that question, and the Prime Minister is clearly relevant to it.
I read the room that the member for Deakin was raising on a point of relevance. The question was also phrased around admitting families being better off now than they were. So if the Prime Minister is being directly relevant about figures and numbers, particularly about what he was asked about, he is being directly relevant, but he's got 30 seconds to make sure he remains directly relevant.
I'm asked to compare and contrast, and that's what I'm doing, Mr. Speaker, and I'll make this point as well. If they had their way, there wouldn't be cheaper medicines. If they had their way, it wouldn't be cheaper childcare. If they had their way, there wouldn't have been any rebates on energy bills. If they had their way, there wouldn't be tax cuts for every taxpayer. And we now know that they've come up with a cost of living plan, but it's just not for workers. It's that workers should pay for some of their mates to have lunch.
Order. The Prime Minister's time has concluded. We'll hear from the member for Newcastle.
Thanks, Speaker. My question is to the Treasurer. How is the Albanese Labor government's responsible economic management helping in the fight against inflation? And are there any approaches that would leave people worse off?
Great question.
Call to the Treasurer.
Thanks, Speaker, and thanks to the member for Newcastle for her wonderful work and for her question. Australians together made very welcome and encouraging progress in the fight against inflation, and we saw that in the numbers last week, which were better than expected and better than forecast. Headline inflation is 2.4% in the bottom of half of the Reserve Bank's range. Underlying inflation came down as well. It's now in the low threes on both fronts. That is the lowest we've seen for some years. Now, there's more to do, Mr. Speaker. We know that because people are still under pressure. But the progress that we have delivered has been substantial and it has been sustained. As the Prime Minister rightly pointed out, when we came to office, inflation was much higher and rising, real wages were falling, and there was a mountain of Liberal debt. And under this Prime Minister, inflation is down, wages are up, unemployment is low. We've delivered two budget surpluses. We've got the debt down and we've rolled out cost of living relief at the same time. And that's what it means to manage the economy in a responsible and methodical way. Now, I'm asked about alternatives, Mr. Speaker, but it's been almost 3 years now, and those opposite are yet to come up with any costed, coherent or credible policies on the economy. All we've got from them is lower wages for workers and longer lunches for bosses, with the taxpayers to foot the bill, Mr. Speaker. He wants workers to pay for bosses' lunches, and he will smash the budget in the process. Now, this is the only kind of policy that could have been agreed at the tail end of a very long lunch, Mr. Speaker. You can imagine them sitting around with the blue teeth and the soy sauce on the tie, coming up with the big ideas, Mr. Speaker. And either they didn't know how much it cost when they announced the policy, or they didn't want Australians to know. They have refused to come clean on the cost of their long lunch policy or what they will cut to pay for that policy. And there's a pattern here. On Sunday, the Leader of the Opposition was asked about whether there'd be cuts in the budget. He said there would be, but he wouldn't tell the Australian people until after the election. Now, this is the very real risk posed by this Leader of the Opposition. If he had his way on tax cuts and wages and energy bills, Australians would already be thousands of dollars worse off, and they'd be worse off still if he wins. And that's what makes this decision that Australians will make this year a very important decision and a very stark choice. Between an opposition focused on cuts and conflict and culture wars who would make people worse off and take Australia backwards, or a Prime Minister and a Labor government helping with the cost of living, making progress on inflation, managing the economy responsibly and building Australia's future.
Call to the Shadow Treasurer.
This was, I think, more heat than light, but it confirms that the costs of living will be in the crosshairs of the upcoming election. I wouldn't be surprised to see more announcements to pull costs lower with the help of further government support, though of course this will put further pressure on the federal and potentially state budgets too, both of which are going in the wrong direction now. The RBA will have to digest all of this data noise ahead of their rate decision in a week or so from now. Given the fragility of the power system, with reports again that the electricity reserve alarm hit a new high after New South Wales coal-powered station suffered a spate of debilitating faults, that's according to the Australian Energy Market Operator, no surprise that spiralling electricity prices are likely to continue. Once again, this could be fixed by a stroke of a pen if the government reserved East Coast gas for Australians rather than shipping it offshore, or worse, also having to re-import gas at international prices, and would also start taxing those exports properly. Which begs the question, if politicians are really serious about cost of living, why not start question time with a gas-related debate? The answer, I'm afraid, is simple. Neither side of politics wants to admit their policy errors in this space, preferring to gaslight cost of living pressures for political advantage. This will, I think, come back to bite them as households wake up to the truth, because much of the cost of living pain are self-inflicted due to plain, stupid policy and self-interest. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.